Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a really incredible, inspiring story, you know, ahead of us. You know, the guest has done it multiple times. We're talking about three times. The last one, you know, was quite a home run. You know, we're talking about $660 million of an exit. So again, everything that you can think of around building, scaling, lessons learned from the first company, which didn't unfold the way that he had hoped for, then also struggles, you know, especially with the last company that he sold at the beginning. The first 2 years, they were not a path full of roses. It was not easy. And then also we're going to be talking about creating an impactful culture. And then also the people that they are serving with the last company and the difference that they're making to them. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Alan Lau. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
So originally born and raised in Hong Kong, but eventually you find yourself in Canada with your family. Give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up?
Yeah, born and raised in Hong Kong. And in the late 80s, our family decided to move to Canada. And what happened was most of my extended family, including mostly my on my mother's side, but on my father's side too, started to move to Canada in the 70s. So family member by family member, we all move. We are the last holdout in a way. So finished high school in Hong Kong and then got my electrical engineering degree and master degree in electrical as well at University of Toronto. My first job was at IBM. Since day one, I know this is the wrong company for me. I just cannot work in a large corporation. And really quickly, I joined a startup company in the very beginning. And that, in a way, I started my entrepreneurial journey.
But what got you there? Because, I mean, obviously, the you know, the idea, especially as immigrants and, you know, coming to a new country, you know, you wanted stability, you know, you had achieved it, you were, you know, at such an incredible, you know, company and very well respected. So at what point do you realize that maybe it makes sense for you to go from like a bigger company to like a smaller company?
Well, you're absolutely right. Just like many immigrants, first generation immigrants, my parents were the same. You know, work for a big corporation, stable job, reputable company like IBM. At that time, it was the largest tech company in the world at that time. So, in a way, they kind of not pushing, but subtly, it was encouraged, put it this way, right? And then I was telling them, I don't think it's going to work out well for me because I really don't like the company. And by the way, my girlfriend and now wife, she's working for a startup company. She's having all the fun. I'm going to join her. You can just imagine the reaction from the parents, but they are very supportive. You know, they didn't say no or anything. They just, well, you have to think twice what you really want to do. IBM is a really good company. So that was an interesting conversation. But, you know, I know what I want. I know what would be good for me and make me happy. And most importantly, in an environment where I would thrive. So, that's how I did it.
So in this case, you know, the environment, you know, the arena, I mean, when you joined, it was under 100 employees, you know, and the company ended up being acquired by none other than Symantec. You know, you were able to develop a really solid relationship with the founders as well. So how was that journey like? And what would you say were your biggest takeaways from that experience too?
Yeah, it was polar opposite to IBM. Things move fast. And my first day, because they were growing so fast, they ran out of desk. The first month, I did not even have a desk. I was literally typing on my keyboard at the corner of someone else's desk. And that was a shock to me. Of course, I understand smaller company might not have all the, you know, gigantic offices like IBM, for example, but that was still a shock to me. And I think this is a very good example of how a smaller startup, but fast-growing startup, how they make things work. There will be a million of problems, but they tackle it. They figure it out. And the company was such a rocket ship. When I joined, I can't remember exactly how many people, but definitely less than 100. But 3-4 years later, when they were acquired by Symantec, they were the world's top 10 PC software company, one of the top 10 in the world, and got acquired by Symantec for close to $500 million. And that was a really big deal. Remember, this is more than 25 years ago. And the product was, of course, now not a lot of people are using fax anymore. But at that time, they built a product called WinFax. In 4 years, 5 years, they came from a startup to become like the de facto standard. If you want a piece of fax software on your PC at that time, you have to use WinFax. There are no other competitors anymore, because everyone just couldn't compete and went bankrupt.
So in this case, you ended up joining Symantec as part of the integration, and you actually stayed there for quite a bit, you know, for a couple of years, four to be precise. But one thing led to the next, and then you see the Arena founders, you know, going at it, you know, with starting a venture studio, and you decided to join them. And obviously, you know, one thing led to the next, and all of a sudden you find yourself starting your first company.
I think that's... was very impactful to me as well. You know, when they started that venture studio, I just jumped on the opportunity. I have to say I learned a lot at Symantec as well. It's a much larger company. And I guess at that time I was a little bit more mature after working for a few years. Working for a big company might not be my natural instinct, but I learned quite a bit. And when I have the opportunity to join a venture studio, it's like fish out of the water for a few years. Now I can jump back into the water. And initially, for the first year, I was assigned to different companies. You know, it's like a venture studio. And then I had the idea of building mobile software, both for gaming publishers and also help us to build our own games as well. And that idea came from me. And then, well, it became a project, first of all, in the venture studio. And eventually that took off and became a real company.
I mean, talking about a real company there, I mean, you guys raised about $30 million. You know, you had, and that was 20 years ago. So obviously we can imagine. But you grew the company to 200 people, but all of a sudden, where you find yourself, you know, in this super successful, you know, hyper growth trajectory, but the whole thing exploded. You know, what happened?
Yeah, I guess the company is called Tira Wireless. So we built or create and also help other gaming studios build mobile games. That's what we did. Give a little bit more context to the audience. We started in 2002. It grew to close to 200 people around 2006 or 2007. The problem was the technology that we built was very specific to the Nokia phones, to the Motorola phones. And we all know in 2007 what happened. The iPhone came out. That was game changing. And then we realized, but it might be too late, what we built is completely irrelevant in the smartphone era. And I think now there's one lesson that we learned from that experience. It's easy for me to say now, in hindsight, what we built at that time, it was a bridge technology. It was a bridge between the old school phone and a smartphone. And when you build a bridge technology, that window of opportunity eventually would close because you are jumping from one era to the other era. Jumping like a bridge connecting two sides of the cliff. Once you cross to the other side, you don't need that bridge anymore. And that's precisely what we built. So it wasn't, in hindsight, it wasn't, we weren't building anything that was timeless.
So what would you say were your biggest lessons, you know, from that journey? Because obviously, as the saying goes, you either succeed or you learn, you know, and it was also your first company. So not an easy hit to swallow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was difficult, but in a way, we applied the learnings to Wattpad as well. We did not want to build another bridge technology company. But when we started Wattpad, we were very clear. We were not really a publishing startup. We don't want to build publishing tools or publishing technology, but we want to focus on addressing the need. What I mean by that is initially we focus on reading and writing. People might read differently. People might publish books differently, but people will continue to read. If we are continuously building things, addressing a human need that would not go away, the company can last forever. And then eventually, when we talk about the Wattpad story, you would know we expanded from reading and writing and eventually expanded into entertainment that includes movies, TV shows, and print books and other forms of entertainment as well.
So let's talk about that because, you know, once say you end up closing the chapter of Tierra Wireless, you basically decided to go at it again, you know, as an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. you know, eventually with Wattpad. But the journey of Wattpad, you know, was not easy at the beginning. You know, the first 2 years, you know, were a little bit of a struggle. And actually, as part of that, you know, one thing that you decided to do too was to start, you know, two other companies, you know, in parallel, which was mm-hmm. Red Boom and then also Fit Me Ape. So,
yep.
So before we get into the Wattpad, because that's where I think, you know, we should, you know, I think that the listeners are going to love that story. Let's put that in pause right now. So things are not working in Wattpad, but walk us through why did you decide to switch your attention to Red Boom and Fit Ape?
Yeah. So I'll give you a little bit more context. I actually started to have the Wattpad idea when I was the CTO at Tierra. One tiny little secret is, despite Tierra is a gaming studio, I love mobile technologies. I love gadgets. And that's one of the reasons why I started the company, but I don't play a lot of games. I'm not a gamer, so the content side doesn't quite excite me. But if you look at my personal media consumption, I read a lot, and this is how I consume media. And I did that prototype in 2002 to 2003, but the phone size was the screen size was so small, you just could not read comfortably, especially long form content. So I didn't really pursue the idea. And then fast forward to 2006, 2007, when the phone screen size was much larger, I resurrected this idea. I was, and by that time, it's becoming clear Tierra is starting to decline. I have to think about a new idea. And that's how I started, or restarted the idea, I should say. And then now my Wattpad co-founder, Ivan, who used to work for Tierra as well, send me a message. Hey, Alan, I'm working on a new product idea as well. And when he sent me that link, guess what I saw? It's a mobile reading app as well. So I thought, wow, Ivan is one of the smartest I've ever worked with. Must be a good idea. So we jump at it like all in and started building the company. What we did not realize was is what we built essentially is a double-sided marketplace to connect readers and writers. It's not just mobile reading, you know, we have a platform for people to read and share stories as well. And that takes a long time to generate traction for any people who are running a marketplace would tell you, we all suffer from the chicken and egg problem. Without any writers, there would be no readers because there's no content. Without any readers, there would be no writers because there's no audience. Why would I upload anything? So we have to overcome that. And that took so much longer than we expected. And that's why to keep us going, we have to do a million things on the side. The Red Boom solution was our consulting gig to generate some cash for us. And we also like the mobile advertising idea. So, you know, in a way, it's almost like a venture studio in and of itself. You know, we just try out different ideas. But we truly, truly believe in the Wattpad idea. We did not unplug. We just keep it on a slow burn, you know. And now, in hindsight, of course, I can say this more easily. It just took time to learn. It actually was the right idea.
Hey, guys. So pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
That's incredible. Obviously, you know, in this case with Red Boom and Fit 8, you guys ended up doing a transaction there. You guys ended up getting the company acquired by Upstream. And that not only gave you some more confidence because you were coming, you know, from really, you know, some significant struggles with the, you know, company folding, you know, the first one, you know, then Wattpad, you know, not taking off the way that you had hoped for. But now you got a win. You know, now you got, you know, one exit. And at this point, you know, what is going on with Wattpad, you know, at the moment of the acquisition?
Yeah, after the acquisition, of course, just like most acquisition, we would work for Upstream for a while. Like I mentioned before, on the side, whenever we have a interesting feature idea on Wattpad, we'll just implement this in the evening over the weekend to continuously improve the product. And as the product continues to improve, as we start to see some writers joining the platform, which in turn attract more readers, the readers, as we increase the size of the audience, more writers find this exciting to join. So that flywheel started to turn faster and faster. So after a year at Upstream, we went back to Wattpad and spent 110% of our time on Wattpad. It was around maybe 2009 that we came back and do it full time.
So for the people that are listening to really get it, what ended up being the business model of Wattpad? How were you guys making money?
Well, at that time, we didn't focus on the business model, which is actually quite counterintuitive. But in hindsight, it's actually worked out. Because for marketplace, the most important thing is getting the liquidity, getting on both sides of the marketplace at scale first. And once you have that traffic, once you have that community, once you have that user base, there will be many other ways to make money. The I would say we first started as advertising. We just put some banner ads on the website. On mobile, there was not much advertising. So we used that as an experiment. I would say that's not even 10% of our time. We focus on building the product to build a massive user base first. And then towards maybe 2015-16, we started to expand into different business models. Advertising started to work, started to be a scale, because by 2015-16, we have like 30 million monthly users, something like that. At that scale, it can generate meaningful revenue already. And then we started to think about pay content, subscription. And then eventually, partially because we started to invest in AI way back in 2012, because we start to see so much data, we have to figure out a way to make good use of it. Through the AI investment, we realized there's so much amazing content IP, original content IP on our platform that, of course, we can monetize on our own platform through pay content eventually. But these IPs can be turned into movies, they can turn into TV shows or other forms of entertainment. So that's when around 2016, we started a new division for Wattpad Studios. We don't hold a camera, at least at that time we didn't. Our job is to figure out the IPs, the content IPs on our platform, find the amazing one, find the one that can turn into an amazing movie, but also the one based on the trajectory, based on AI telling us it will become a big hit. It will become, the story arc is very suitable for adaptation to movies. And of course, building fan base with millions of people is a proof, the content would become a proven hit. Because I have to give a little bit more context to the audience. In Hollywood, you see the Oscar-winning movies. Those are the 1%. 90% of the movies don't make any money. The success rate, the probability of success is actually quite low. But using technology to pick out the content from our platform, we see a million uploads every day. And even today, we only produce maybe 100 movies or TV shows, 100 projects per year. So it's really small percentage. But these are the gems. When we adapt them to movies and TV shows, they have far higher probability of success, way more than 10% that Hollywood typically see. And that's the business model.
So in this case, I mean, you guys raised a fair amount of money. I mean, you guys raised $120 million from the likes of Union Square Ventures. You had Jerry Yang, you know, the founder of Yahoo. I mean, you had some really big heavy hitters. Mm-hmm. And tremendous business that you guys have built. And mm-hmm. eventually, you know, there is suitors, you know, coming and knocking, you know, that are interested on pursuing an acquisition. So. Yep. Tell us about how the whole acquisition with Navier, you know, make us insiders. Like, how did this whole thing, you know, started brewing? Mm-hmm. What was the process like? Yeah. Because it ended up being a $660 million home run of an exit, mm-hmm. you know, which is remarkable. So walk us through it.
Yeah. So maybe let me step back. We got investments from Union Square Ventures and Coastal Ventures in the Valley as well. And one thing in common about these two firms and many of our other investors on our cap table is they never asked for an exit, which is very, very counterintuitive as well. The conversation over the years, we never talk about the exit in the boardroom. We just focus on building a great business. And we believe by doing so, it actually would enable the optionality for us, perhaps go IPO, perhaps M&A when the right opportunities come, but perhaps we just keep going, and that's all right. There's nothing wrong to build highly profitable, highly successful private company and never go public, never sell, and that's okay too. However, in 2021, we received an inbound offer, and then we said, maybe we should just see what the market looks like. We are not selling, we are not putting up the for sale sign, but at least engage into a conversation and see what other corporations, other bigger players in the market are thinking. And then, of course, we know Naver, especially the Webtoon division. To give more context, Naver is one of the largest internet companies in Asia. They are the largest in Korea. They have 20,000 employees, and it's like Amazon or Alphabet. They have multiple divisions, but one of the largest divisions, they started off with search, like Google, but they also have a division like Google's YouTube. Naver has a division called Webtoon. It's basically what Wattpad does, except for comics. It's for comics. It's for manga, you know, more visual content. And they also have a studio turning some of the IPs, the content IPs, the top content IPs on Webtoon and turn them into TV shows and animation as well. So they understand this business model really well, using a digital platform, find the IP, and then adapt to as many forms of entertainment as possible. In a way, I don't have to even explain to them what we do. They got it. And the most important thing is so complementary, because they don't have fiction, at least not in outside of Korea. We have fiction. We are a global business. We have users around the world. So there's no overlap. And also from a geographic perspective, they are very strong in East Asia. We actually don't have a lot of users in East Asia. We have users in practically any country, every country in the world, except for countries in East Asia. So from that perspective, also a match made in heaven. So once we started talking, we just realized the synergy was just so massive.
That, what was that day like when you inked the deal, $660 million?
It was a surreal experience because 6 months before we announced that deal, if you ask me, are we selling the company? And I would give you a very definitive answer. No, we are not even thinking about this. And this opportunity in a way just kind of fell on our lap. And of course, it's a good outcome financially for the founders, for the investors, for pretty much everyone on the cap table. But that's only one piece of the puzzle. At that time, when we talk about whether we should sell or not, of course, financial is one aspect, but the other aspect is strategically, does it really make sense? Is it going to take Wattpad to the next level? That was actually a very important part of the consideration. And I think based on all the reasons that I just talked about, it was a very attractive deal to us.
So obviously, you know, the transaction happens, but, you know, you're an entrepreneur, you know, you got to keep going. Yeah, the creativity and the juices flowing, no? And on the side, actually, in parallel, your wife, you know, who also happened to be part of the story of Wattpad as well, you know, she had left the company in 2014 to start a venture capital firm. Basically, the company, the venture capital firm is called Two Small Fish Ventures. And you guys have already invested in over 40 companies. What do you guys typically look for, and what has been your biggest lesson too from now seeing things from the other side of the table?
Yeah, so the thesis, our investment thesis changed over time because Wattpad is, as I mentioned, is a marketplace. So we, early on, we solely invested in network effect based business. So there are a lot of marketplaces, but of course, not only marketplaces, we invested in some other companies too. A couple of the notable investments, then we wrote the first check to these companies, at least when they first came up of the idea. It looked they both look kind of weird. They both look I'm not sure, but we kind of saw the diamond in the rough, partially because of our experience in building Wattpad. And these two companies I would highlight as one is called BenchSci, the other is called Ada. BenchSci is an AI company that's help scientists, especially in pharmaceutical companies, to kind of share their failures, share their knowledge, and over time they build a very gigantic knowledge repository to help people to find new protein for drugs. And now today, 16 out of the 20 top pharmaceutical companies are using the product. And Ada is an AI company. It's a chatbot for support, but now they're handling millions of chat transactions for customer support for airline companies to telcos, like every day on the platform. So these two are good examples of how we leverage our previous experience and find the gems before other people can see it. At the same time, the market also evolved. So skip a few steps, fast forward to today. The area of focus, there are three areas of focus. The first one is AI. Well, we ran an AI company for over a decade. We know what we are talking about. So that's an obvious one. The second one is protocols. Mainly blockchain protocols, because we start to see AI and blockchain start to emerge. What I mean by that is, for example, we have a portfolio company called Story Protocol. It's in the world of generative AI, as we see even further explosion of content, there needs to be a central repository, not just to store the content. It's not less about storage, but to manage the ownership, the share, the upside of the content. It's like GitHub for creative IP. So this company is also doing really well. So that's the second area of focus. And then the third area of focus is sustainable computing. Also, almost like protocols. It's a second order effect of AI, because the computing demand is drastically increased because of generative AI. And we just happen that we are both my wife, Eva, and I, we are engineers. She used to work for ATI, now AMD. I'm an electrical engineer. And our partner, Brandon, who was the founding data scientist of Wattpad, he also joined us as one of the partners of the firm. He has a short stint at NVIDIA. So we understand semicon, we understand hardware really well as well. So we are finding some very, very interesting opportunities in these areas. But I would also add one thing that we always look for is whether this product, protocol, or platform would completely change the behavior, whether it's consumer or business users. Because when we see a drastic change in behavior, like upending the workflow in a company, or if it can eliminate an entire department, that's easily can generate 10x return. And then early stage, we got in early, another 10x. So I would like to summarize our objective is to look for those 100x return companies. When we write a dollar check to the company, we hope we can get back a $100 bill.
That's amazing. Finding those gems. So I guess for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
I'm the easiest person to find on the internet. Send me an email at Allen, A-L-L-E-N, at twosmallfish.vc, or find me on X or LinkedIn.
Amazing. Well, hey, easy enough. Well, Allen, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an honor to have you with us.
It's an honor to be part of it. Thank you.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.